Welcome to the weekly broadcast of Let's Talk About It, produced by the Public Affairs Department of KXO AM 1230 and FM 107.5 radio. Let's Talk About It is directed by Mario Espinoza with the technical assistance of Carol Buckley. This program brings weekly community mental health issues to your radio. Let's Talk About It is produced for and presented as a public service by Imperial County Behavioral Health Service, Leticia Plancarte Garcia, Director. And now let's join our co-hosts, Patricia Arevalo Caro and Alfonso Ruiz, for today's program.
Hello, Imperial Valley and everybody listening in. Welcome to Let's Talk About It, a radio show and podcast brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services, where we explore the depths of mental health, well-being, and self-care. I'm your host for today, Alfonso Ruiz, and each week we'll be having real conversations about the challenges we face, the strategies that help us cope, and the ways we can find peace in our busy lives. Whether you're here to learn more about mental health, looking for support, or just need a little inspiration, you're not alone. This is a space to share, heal, and grow together. Remember, whether you're living with mental illness or supporting someone who is, help is always available, and seeking help is a sign of strength, not weakness. For services locally, call 442-265-1525 or toll-free 1-800-817-5292. Services are tailored to your needs and remain confidential. So let's take a deep breath, get comfortable, and let's dive in. This week, we're going to learn more about obsessive compulsive disorder, also known as OCD. We have a special guest today, Michelle Gomez Salazar. She's a licensed clinical social worker, and she knows a lot about OCD because this is one of the things that she treats as a therapist, as well as anxiety. So we're going to talk to Michelle more today. Before I head over to Michelle, I just want to remind you guys to join us on Thursdays at 8 a.m. on Radio Bilingue on 88.7 FM, Sunday mornings at 7 a.m. on KXO AM radio station 1230, and on Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. on KXO Radio FM 107.5. So with that being said, I want to introduce Michelle. Hello, how are you today, Michelle?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me today, Alfonso.
Oh, it's our pleasure. We're really excited to have you here on our show today. And just getting to know a little bit about you, Michelle, and the amazing work that you do with the population around OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. Before we dive into the topic itself, tell us a little bit about you, Michelle, you know, your background. What brought you to do this amazing work, challenging work that you do day in and day out?
Yeah, well, I started my career as a medical social worker. I'm originally from New York, from New York City, and I, after completing my graduate school program, I still wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do with my social work degree. I knew that I wanted to be in a helping profession, and so I did choose social work for that reason. It was very appealing to me when I was in college, but I wasn't sure at what capacity, what I wanted my role to look like exactly. So I ended up working, getting my first job out of graduate school at New York Presbyterian Hospital, which is a major hospital in New York City, and I worked for their HIV/AIDS clinic. I was there for about 7 years, and during that time, I worked collaboratively with doctors, nurses, dietitians, and we were all part of a team of providers who helped those who were dealing with HIV, AIDS, who were seeking medical care, but also who needed a lot of, social support as well. And so my role there was to be able to provide patients there with resources, do some clinical work with them. It was a great experience. I really, really enjoyed it. I got a chance to see also what it was like living with a diagnosis that carried so much stigma, was very taboo, and, often very misunderstood. And I ended up really wanting to focus my work more, doing more one-on-one consistent work with them. Unfortunately, I was only in my role there, I was only able to see them on an infrequent basis. And so I was craving more of that clinical work. And that led me to pursue a career in mental health. So after leaving the hospital, I decided that that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to work with clients individually, get to know my clients on a deeper level, meet with them one-on-one on a weekly basis. And I started working in Jackson Heights, which is actually a very diverse area in New York City. I don't know if anyone's familiar, but there's a lot of Latinos, a lot of, you know, people from, you know, I think they have Little India there as well. So very diverse place. And so I got a chance to work with the population in that area. And I was there for a short time. During this time, I was also starting a family and, you know, on a personal level, had a little breaks here and there trying to navigate my professional life with my family life. But that's how I got into mental health work. And it wasn't until the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And prior to the pandemic, I had moved to California. So that's why I'm licensed both in New York and in California. But it wasn't until the pandemic when I started to notice a lot of folks were really dealing with, you know, symptoms, mental health symptoms. You know, people were coming in with increased symptoms of depression, anxiety. And one of the things that I started to see also was a lot of OCD, or what looked like OCD to me, because I really wasn't as familiar with OCD. They don't give us a lot of training in grad school on OCD, unfortunately. We may get like a lecture with a small portion of that lecture on OCD, but we don't really get an in-depth understanding. So when I started to see some of these clients, I wasn't equipped to help them, and I had to refer them out. And some of them, you know, it took a lot of courage and a lot of bravery for some of them to really be able to open up and disclose some of their symptoms. And so I got curious, and I became really interested in just learning more. And I ended up getting taking some trainings, learning about OCD, exposure and response prevention therapy, which is the first line treatment for OCD, for therapy. And that's kind of how I got into this work with OCD. It was really during that time. I've been doing seeing clients virtually since then.
Wow. Michelle, you know, I could tell, and I mentioned it in our segments that we have, you know, with different guests that come through, when you meet somebody that works in what I consider like the human services field, social work specifically, like you always hear the passion, right? Like we want to work with people. We want to help people. We want to see people get better. And we want to give a little bit of ourselves back to society. And I see that in you. You know, your journey is amazing, you know, starting in New York, with your graduate program, working with the HIV population, Jacksonville, I think is where you mentioned you were next. And, Jackson Heights. There's probably a Jacksonville somewhere out there too.
Somewhere.
But Jackson Heights, and you know, just getting to work with different populations, and then now back out here in California. COVID was a very interesting time, and we, you know, where I'm at specifically, I oversee a couple of our children and adolescent outpatient clinics, and during COVID, we saw a lot of children when they did come through, they were coming through with more severe symptoms. During that time, you know, maybe from being sheltered for so long and also being afraid of going out and getting exposed to COVID itself. And I think it's a really good starting point to start the conversation around OCD. Just thinking about a couple of things that come to mind, you know, for those of you listening in, when I think of OCD, what I used to think, and Michelle will help us kind of iron out a few of those things, the myths or myth busters. I remember of a movie I saw at a younger age. It was probably late 90s, early 2000s, Enough with Jennifer Lopez. And she was escaping, or she was in a relationship where there was intimate partner violence. And her spouse in the movie was very meticulous about how the towels on the kitchen rack had to be perfectly aligned. And there's a scene where I remember he comes in and he knows that something is off because the towels are not aligned. Well, actually, she notices that he's in the house because the towels are aligned. And she's like, oh my gosh, like, I think he found me. And, you know, just in general, is that like something that's pretty accurate? I mean, I'm sure it's more, there's more to it, right? It can't be so simple, but, for those of us just listening in, is that kind of what it looks like?
So that could potentially be a one way that we see OCD, but you're right. There definitely is a lot more to it. So perhaps I can get into a little bit of just like how one is diagnosed with OCD. What criteria do you need to meet in order to have an OCD diagnosis? So what we typically look for is obsessions. And obsessions can be anything from doubts, distressing and unwanted thoughts, mental images, unwanted urges. And typically, they are very distressing. They're not aligned often with the individual's values or who they are as a person. And that's why they're so distressing. And they can cause a lot of anxiety, distress. Sometimes we might see guilt, disgust, but they really essentially are very bothersome to the individual. So much so that individuals feel they need to act in some sort of way to either bring down that distress or to prevent some sort of perceived feared outcome from coming true. And so they then engage in what we call compulsions. Compulsions are, they can be behavioral, they are behavioral acts, and they can be physical acts that are observable that others can see. And oftentimes that's kind of what we see in the media, right? People washing hands or people aligning things, people making sure that things are symmetrical. That's often the representation that we see in movies. But compulsions can also be mental and mental acts. So mental actions can include things like mentally reviewing something over and over, or neutralizing an unwanted thought with a positive thought. It could be repeating something over and over as a way to convince yourself that, you know, this terrible thing won't happen, or that you're not the bad person that OCD is trying to convince you of. It could be hypothesizing things in the future, you know, what might happen in the future to kind of prevent, make sure that you're like prepared for something that might happen. And it could, you know, in essence, it's you engaging in some sort of behavior, but in your mind. And that's often, I see a lot of my clients have, many of them have mental compulsions. And in the thing that's really, you know, it's tough because it's very isolating when there are presentations of OCD where everything is just happening in the mind. The obsessions are happening in the mind. The compulsions are happening in the mind, and the person is experiencing that distress internally. And so on the outside, things might look okay, but on the inside, people are suffering. So, so that is, one piece of OCD. The other piece that we often look for when we're diagnosing OCD is we're looking for impairment, how this these symptoms are impacting someone's life, their ability to function. And typically, you know, folks are impaired in some sort of way at work, socially, academically, even just being able to do their day-to-day home responsibilities can be impaired. So those are really like the pieces that we look for in order to diagnose someone with OCD.
So, you know, just thinking about, you know, power, right? I think all of us naturally want to feel empowered to be able to do certain things, but it almost sounds like, from what I'm hearing, that somebody who has is diagnosed with OCD or is experiencing these OCD symptoms, they may know that some of these thoughts they're having are irrational, but almost feel, it seems like, powerless to do anything about it. Is that pretty accurate?
Yeah, one of the things that I commonly hear from many of my clients, usually, but not always, there is some insight with clients who are able to see and recognize that there's something that doesn't make sense about my response to these thoughts or even the thoughts themselves. Like, this whole situation just doesn't make sense. But then there's another part of them when they're in that OCD space that is so fearful, that is so afraid, and is so caught up in the what if. So OCD is actually nicknamed the doubting disorder because it really keeps people in a state of doubt. And they're doubting constantly, and they're trying to, you know, resolve things in their mind. They're engaging in compulsions physically. And all the more that you engage in these compulsions, the more you're reinforcing this cycle. And it becomes this vicious cycle that, you know, treatment can be helpful in getting out of it. But, you know, the more you do, the more you get caught in it.
Wow. And when it comes to treatment, Michelle, did you mention earlier that, like, therapy is one of the best ways to get treatment? Like, is that what the evidence shows or research shows, that therapy is the most helpful for anyone diagnosed with OCD?
Yeah, so according to the International OCD Foundation, the first line treatment approaches for OCD are exposure and response prevention therapy, also known as ERP, which is a cognitive behavioral therapy. And what that really means is that we're focusing on the relationship between thoughts, feelings, behaviors, and ERP is very heavy on behavioral change, so it's very action-based. And by shifting behavior, you will eventually change the message that your brain is receiving, and that will then shift the way that you think. And, you know, that will create a break in that cycle. So ERP is definitely one of the first line treatments. Medication is also another first line treatment, in particular SSRIs, which are often used to treat depression and anxiety as well. With OCD, you know, sometimes those doses can actually, you might need to have those doses be a little bit higher to treat OCD. But yes, those are also first line treatments, and combination of both can be helpful as well. I do have many clients who, you know, who might have symptoms that are a little bit more on the severe side, and medication, while it's not going to take those symptoms away, it does take the edge off of those symptoms, and it allows clients to maybe engage in therapy a little bit more than if they were not taking the medication.
Okay, wonderful. You know, I was thinking back to when we were starting the show, and you were talking to us about COVID, right? COVID times were interesting, as I mentioned, very scary for a lot of us, for many of our population. And just thinking about, like, what's normal versus what's not considered normal anymore during COVID, and even to this day, right? I think a lot of our practice has changed around, like, hygiene. And during that time, and even now, you know, a lot of us, we carry hand sanitizer with us. You see it readily available even at the gas stations. And so if I'm going and every time I see a hand sanitizer, this may be too general for you to answer, but I just wanted to entertain it for a little bit. And I'm just like, I got to pump every time, right? And I got to make sure my hands are clean. And then if I go to my next stop, maybe it's a grocery store, there's more hand sanitizer, I'm pumping again, putting it on. At which point should I ask myself, like, hey, is this normal? Am I over hand sanitizing? Is this like a compulsion I'm having? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, good question. I think, you know, it could vary. But one of the things that we definitely want to look at when we see these, like, repetitive behaviors is we want to look at the function of that behavior? Why is this person engaging in this, you know, pumping of the hand sanitizer, right? Because the same behavior, on the outside, you know, could be for different reasons, right? But we want to see, like, is this person engaging in this behavior because it is tied to some sort of doubt, to some sort of disturbing belief that they're having or thought that they're having, and this is their way of trying to bring down that anxiety, that distress that they're feeling, and it feels urgent, and they're trying to do this as a way to bring that down, or maybe they're having some sort of fear that something might happen, and if they don't do this, they don't engage in this behavior, then something terrible will happen, right? OCD really magnifies outcomes, and so it really leads individuals to believe that the outcome is going to be a catastrophe. It's going to be terrible, and so you have to do these behaviors, otherwise you're doomed. And so that's why it's so scary. And so I'd want to look at what the function is of that behavior, and I'd want to know if it's tied to an obsession. And so we really, OCD is very cyclical in nature. So we want to see whether that cycle that I kind of described with the obsession, it starts usually with a trigger, right? Something, a situation, a person, a place, a thing that triggers this, an obsession. And then that obsession leads to some sort of, you know, anxiety or distress. And then that person feels this like urge that oftentimes feels like very strong, like they can't move past it. They have to do this thing. They feel this sense of urgency to do something in that moment. And then they engage in a compulsion. So I'd want to see if that cycle is present when I explore what's happening behind that behavior.
Okay, that's really interesting. And I'm going to want to talk more about, you know, the assessment piece when you're speaking to somebody in our second segment. But it's really meticulous, kind of like the things that you're looking for. It almost sounds like there have to be a certain amount of things happening in order for you to say, like, yeah, it could be OCD and this is how we can help treat it. From what I heard, trigger, to obsession, experiencing anxiety or distress, having that urge that you can't move past it, where if you don't do it, like something catastrophic could happen, and then the compulsion.
And it might not even be something catastrophic will happen. For some individuals, they're just afraid that they're not going to be able to handle moving on without acting. So yeah, they need to make that distress go away right away. So that could also be a part of the picture. And of course, to add to that, we also want to see how is this impairing a person's life, right? How is this impairing? Is that person who's pumping, like, are their hands getting extremely dry and, you know, getting cracked, and it's, you know, affecting them and it's painful? Are they, you know, getting delayed with important things that they have to do because they're stopping and pumping and looking for sanitizer, maybe leaving and then driving back, you know? So how is this impacting a person's life as well? How is it getting in the way of them being able to live in the life that they want to live?
Yeah, I really like your description of it. I could really visualize it, you know, almost, you know, being at the gas station and, oh my gosh, there is no hand sanitizer left. Like, that could really create a huge barrier for you to get to your next destination. If that's so, then, you know, maybe we should look at it. Like, how severe is this impacting you? Or how is it impacting you to the level of severity, I guess, what I'm trying to say. You have my wheels turning into my head now, just thinking about things. I remember I had somebody, and we're going to end just shortly, with our first segment, but I remember knowing someone, a close friend, that every time we drove by, what was it, a stoplight, they had to pound the roof of the car with their fist. And I asked them, like, why do you do that? And they're like, it's just for good luck. If I don't do it, I don't know that I'm going to get to my next destination. And this was before even myself, I was I had gone to grad school, and I was like, that's really interesting. I've never seen that. And every time I was in the car with him, he would have to do that. Never put too much more thought into it. And now that we're talking, I'm thinking that would have been really interesting to explore further.
That definitely, I have seen presentations of OCD like that for sure. I'd want to, and I think, you know, again, I'd want to ask a client who's doing that, what would happen if you stopped? What are you afraid would happen? Yeah. Right. And so that can kind of help guide our conversation into seeing like, okay, like what else is behind this behavior?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, to those listening, this is the end of our first segment. We'll be back just shortly with Michelle Gomez-Salazar, licensed clinical social worker, to talk about OCD. Stay tuned. See you soon.
Let's talk about it. Bringing community mental health issues to your radio. Listen each Sunday morning to KXO AM 1230 at 7 a.m. and now on Sunday evening at 7 p.m. Or log on to KXORadio.com for a 5-minute podcast highlight of the show or the show in its entirety. This program is produced by the Public Affairs Department of KXO AM 1230 and FM 107.5. Let's Talk About It is presented as a public service of Imperial County Behavioral Health Services.
Hello, everyone. This is Alfonso Ruiz, your host for today on our weekly radio show, Let's Talk About It. We have Michelle Gomez-Salazar, our speaker for today. She's a licensed clinical social worker. She's our guest for today, and she's been talking to us about OCD. And something that we want to dive into in this next segment is really knowing what it's like to go in thinking, you know, hey, do I have OCD? Like that's a question that should be normalized, right? If you're listening to the show and you're thinking, you know what, I'm seeing some of these things. I think I'm experiencing some of the things I'm hearing on the show today. What would it look for someone going in and speaking to a clinician, a therapist about them possibly having OCD? So Michelle, can you kind of talk to us about that process, yourself as a clinician, like what does that diagnosis process look like? Some of the questions that you ask and then just kind of determining a treatment.
Yeah. So in my practice, I usually like to spend those first few sessions, doing a thorough assessment and also getting some history, getting to know the client. I'm not only looking at OCD symptoms. That's a piece of it, but I do want to kind of get a broader perspective of this person, who they are, because, you know, there might be other things happening as well. We want to get like a good history of like what's happening medically. What are their past like mental health experiences? Have they been diagnosed with anything else? Could they meet criteria for something else? So I'll oftentimes screen for the common ones like depression, anxiety. With OCD, it can also overlap a lot with things like neurodiversity, eating disorders, you know, so I kind of keep trauma. I kind of keep my eyes open also and asking questions, some screener questions as well to see like whether I need to further assess for some of these other things too. Usually in those first initial visits, actually in the first visit, I will also assess for suicidality. That's a very important thing that we all therapists like want to make sure that our clients are safe. And with OCD, sometimes, you know, it's a hard thing to live with. And sometimes some folks have been living with it for a long time and they're really suffering. And so we want to see how that might be impacting them. Whether there are any thoughts or intentions of harming themselves because life is feeling too hard, and, you know, supporting them, creating a safety plan, just ensuring that they are in a safe, place and that we can help keep them safe. So, typically my first session is about getting to know them. I'll send, some, onboarding documentation for my clients to complete. You know, we want to have like those consent forms completed. Clients need to be on board with treatment, right? They need to agree to it. They need to know what the risks are. They need to know what the benefits are. So all of those documents are there to explain that. And I usually send a little questionnaire that clients can fill as much or as little as they want, sharing with me some information that I'm going to plan to gather at our first session anyway, but if they complete that questionnaire, it makes that information gathering process a little easier, and we don't have to spend too much time on that. I can just fill in some of those gaps. It's also about building a rapport, building a relationship. You know, when clients come to therapy, you are sharing some very, very personal things. And one of the most important things in the therapeutic relationship is having a good, trusting relationship with whoever you're meeting with. And actually research shows that that is probably one of the top, maybe if not the main, most important thing in treatment outcomes is the rapport that you have with your therapist. So I do my best to really be there to hear out the client, listen to them, help them feel supported, help them feel validated, as I'm also gathering and collecting information and sort of synthesizing in my mind what's going on and getting a better understanding and picture of who they are. I'll get some family history as well. You know, with OCD, we do see that it can run in families. So I'll ask about family history as well. I want to know what's happening in their life. You know, I look at their age. I look at, you know, where they're at. Women, there are some women who are perimenopausal. We know that hormones kind of, you know, do their own thing during that age. And so I want to kind of just gather all that information and see where they're at. Like, what's life looking like for them right now in this moment in time, and who are they? And then as I move along, I'll do what's called the Y box with them. So the Y box stands for the Yale-Brown Obsessive Compulsive Scale. That's one of the commonly used assessment tools that we utilize. And it's essentially a tool that goes where we as the clinician and the client will go through all a bunch of different types of commonly seen obsessions and compulsions, and we want to know like everything. So, we go through a bunch of different themes. You know, obsessions around contamination. You know, sex themes, taboo themes, you name it. And then there's a portion of the questionnaire that asks some questions. There's like 10 questions that we ask that help us determine, give us a severity score. So it helps us kind of see, like it gives us a number and helps us see where clients might be in terms of symptom severity. And of course, that's like one piece of the assessment. It's an important one. But, you know, we also look at what the client is sharing, and I use these first few sessions also to provide a lot of psychoeducation. So I want clients to really understand their diagnosis, to ask questions, to feel supported. You know, getting a diagnosis also can bring up a lot of emotions, a lot of feelings, and so my job is also to ensure that client is, you know, feeling supported and understanding what this diagnosis means. And so I will take some time to provide that education, to answer their questions, to check in with them, to send them also some material and resources so that they can, you know, read it on their own time as well. Yeah, so it's a lot that we do in those first few sessions.
No, I could really tell. And, you know, just having that holistic approach, right? So important. Not just, hey, I'm feeling like I have OCD you as a therapist saying, okay, let me only focus on that. It's really peeling back the layers and saying, okay, let's really get to know you, right? And I'm here to help is what I'm hearing from you. And that rapport that you establish with somebody, you know, that genuine approach of like, I care and I want to help and let me see how I can is so important, especially because of what you're telling us. It sounds like some of the questions might be like deeply personal. And I think that, you know, having an honest approach, a genuine approach is going to help somebody feel comfortable and say, hey, you know what? This is a no judgment zone. This is really how I'm feeling. And it's going to give you, all of the information you need to treat the individual in the best way possible.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, some clients who come, this might be the first time in therapy. This might be the first time that they're sharing some of these really terrifying obsessions out loud and saying them to another person. And so, one of the things that I also like to do is normalize what is happening and really let them know, hey, you know what? You actually aren't the only person who has thoughts like these. Other people are out there living with OCD and having very similar thoughts as you. So a lot of people think they start to develop this idea about themselves, you know, like what's wrong with me? Like, is there something really, really seriously wrong with me because I'm having these doubts and these thoughts, and like, can I be cured? Can I live on with life? And so there's that piece to it too. So normalizing it, validating, is all really important in those, you know, not just in those first few sessions, but just like throughout.
Throughout treatment. Yeah, absolutely. Earlier we're talking about the media and how it portrays OCD. Gave that one example earlier, and I think of another one where you see an individual that can't leave their house until they lock, unlock their door for X amount of times, and it's like that mental ritual that they do as well. So social media gives us these, I think, easier social media and media in general, easier representations of what OCD could look like. But in your experience, Michelle, what does this look like in real life?
Yeah, good question. You know, I think that's one of the misunderstandings with OCD is that because we only see these few representations in the media, that's usually what people think is OCD. And sometimes I've had clients who have come, it's very obvious that they have OCD, and yet they really didn't know it was OCD or had no idea or had others in their family tell them, no, that's not OCD because it doesn't look this way, you know? And so, OCD can look in so many different ways. OCD can attach itself to pretty much anything. So yes, we do see those common themes, like themes around contamination, you know, where people are afraid of, fearful of like germs and, you know, dirt and really the, usually the fear is about, you know, causing illness or causing death, right? As I said, OCD is very catastrophic. So there's usually something really, really terrifying at the other end. It's not just about germs and cleanliness, but it's about I might get sick or I might die or cause someone else to get sick and die. So it could be that catastrophic. We see OCD. So the other one that we commonly see in the media is symmetry or like perfectionism or just right OCD, where you might know, see folks doing things in a particular way, like it has to be done in this particular way. And it really isn't about perfectionism. It's about the urge to need to fix something in a way because there's this real deep sense of like distress and like a lack of completion about something. And so it's not always about even I need to have this thing perfectly aligned. Sometimes it's like I just need to move this thing until and leave it when it feels right, like internally. I have this like sense of relief internally. Some other themes, harm is a common one. So harm OCD, we will often see people who are afraid that they might be capable of causing harm to others or causing harm to themselves or doing, you know, any kind of harmful thing. And folks, you know, really begin to distrust themselves. They are, by definition, like I said, you know, these are distressing thoughts. So they cause distress. They go against the person's values. They go against who they are. And so they're terrified of the possibility. It's not that they are actually going to do any harm. It's that they're terrified of like, but what if? What if I turn into a serial killer? What if I secretly want to harm my kids and I don't know it? What if I turn into that mom that drowned her children? Like, what if that's me? How can I know for sure that that won't be me in the future, right? let's see, there's another one that's pretty common that's also very taboo is pedophilia OCD, where again, people are afraid that they might become a pedophile, or they maybe are secretly a pedophile and they don't know it. And again, there's no basis to this. These are probably the people that are the least likely to engage in anything. And again, the compulsions are typically avoidance. They want to stay away from children because they are so scared that of the what ifs that they, you know, engage in compulsions like avoidance or mentally reassuring things or reassuring themselves or questioning things in their mind. Was that appropriate, the way that I hugged that person or the way that I hugged that child? Did I secretly like that? Did I secretly, you know, so they start to question their intentions. Relationship OCD, people start to doubt maybe their own feelings towards their partner, or they start to doubt, you know, whether their partner loves them. So really, and there's so many more out there, but, those are just a few examples.
Oh, Michelle, that's a great, overview. And just incredibly powerful to know, like, it's essentially what we may consider an irrational fear, but for the individual, it's very rational. And to them, it's logical. Like, this may really happen. Yeah. We're going to end our second segment here, kind of keeping our audience really, interested. We're going to pick it up in our last session right now. Please join us with Michelle, Gomez Salazar, myself, Alfonso Ruiz, on your weekly radio show. Let's talk about it.
You're listening to Let's Talk About It. If you have questions about services Imperial County Behavioral Health may offer that deal with today's show topic, please feel free to call 760-482-4000. Let's Talk About It is presented weekly on KXO AM 1230, FM 107.5, and KXOradio.com as a public service of Imperial County Behavioral Health Services.
Welcome back, everyone. Thank you for joining us on your weekly radio show, Let's Talk About It. On today's show, we've been speaking with Michelle Gomez-Salazar. She's a licensed clinical social worker, and we've been talking about OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. We've learned a lot during today's show, some of the myths about OCD. We've learned a little bit about, you know, what it looks like, the media representation versus real life OCD, and some of the themes that we've heard about. And also, you know, what it looks like to go in to speak to a therapist about this and what the assessment process looks like. Michelle, we thank you for your time. You know, we're in our last segment. You know, something interesting that maybe we don't think about all the time is, you know, are there things that, you know, we shouldn't say about OCD or that we just shouldn't say, right? Because it's not like really appropriate or it's not really well received. So I kind of want to start our segment there. Like, are there things that you've come across that, you know, people really shouldn't say?
Yeah, definitely. Us therapists in the OCD field, we hear sometimes things that are said, you know, and sometimes even in a joking manner, that are so extremely harmful to folks who are living with this very, very really debilitating, distressing disorder. One of the ones that we hear a lot of is everyone's a little OCD, which is not true. You know, you either meet criteria for OCD or you don't, but OCD is a serious condition. And so saying that can really minimize, the pain and the hurt and the suffering that folks with OCD are living with. So no, everyone is not a little OCD, and folks who do have OCD, it really can impact their well-being in such a, you know, big way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, just some other examples. I think there was, actually I'm remembering like one of the Kardashians not so long ago, said something about, like, you know, loving her OCD, had made some comments about loving her OCD because it, you know, helps to keep her, like, stay on track and stay organized. And, you know, again, another very harmful comment, because people who have OCD they don't like their OCD. By definition, it causes them distress. So, and it also leads to further misunderstandings when people say that without having an OCD diagnosis, especially, because it perpetuates this idea that OCD is about perfectionism and it's about keeping things tidy and it's about that thing, that sort of thing. When really, you know, there's a difference. There's a difference between someone who has OCD and someone who has a preference for cleanliness or a preference for having things be tidy and in a specific way. And that's not OCD. OCD is not a preference. OCD is unwanted. It's distressing. So that's another one. And the last one that I think of that some of my clients have experienced themselves is when loved ones or others might say things, make offhanded comments like, just don't think about it. You know, just stop worrying so much. Okay. And so that's another harmful thing to say. You know, if it were that easy, then really people would not be living with OCD. OCD wouldn't exist if you could just stop it, turn it on and turn it off. So yeah, so it can be really invalidating and it could further stigmatize people and lead to people really thinking that there's something really wrong with them because why can't I stop these things? If, you know, I should be able to, other people are not dealing with this and I am. So what's wrong with me? Maybe these thoughts are true. Maybe these things are real.
I appreciate you sharing that with us. You know, a big part of the radio show is to provide that education as well and really help people understand that sometimes unintentionally we may say things that are harmful or it may be trending, right? Like you mentioned the Kardashians. A lot of people look up to influencers or the Kardashians, and these are influential individuals. And if they start hearing that, then they may start normalizing it when in actuality, like you mentioned, OCD is a serious impairment that someone who has it really doesn't want it, right? And it takes treatment from a professional as yourself to really help overcome these symptoms of OCD that are impairing them to live their daily life. So thank you for talking to us about that. I've heard it. Also just people nonchalantly saying, oh, it's my anxiety. You know, I got a little bit of anxiety or ADHD, yeah. Right? And so, these are really specific to individuals that actually have that clinical diagnosis. Yeah. Thank you, Michelle, for talking to us about that. And, you know, if there was something that you wanted to leave our audience with today, what would that be?
Yeah, I think I want to leave folks with a sense of hope. You know, there's so many people out there that are probably quietly living in distress with some of these symptoms. And I hope that this could reach some of those folks. And if it does, for them to know that there is treatment out there, that people do get better. OCD is a treatable disorder. And there are options. I know I spoke about ERP, I spoke about medication, but there are other like second line, third line, treatment approaches as well, which maybe I could just mention a couple of those, but, there's acceptance and commitment therapy, which a lot of us do utilize in conjunction with ERP, where we, ACT is a way to that really focuses on living a values-based life, even in the face of discomfort and distress, and also creating flexibility in how we show up, you know, in our life. You know, there's a lot of really great things that OCD treatment can offer that is helpful, not just with OCD, but just in general for coping with life. Another one that I didn't mention that I think is worth mentioning because it's a standalone treatment that is gaining more popularity in the U.S. It's called ICBT and it stands for inference-based CBT. So that's a second line treatment that has been around since the 90s. It's you know, it has evidence, you know, it's evidence-based, but it hasn't been as widely researched as ERP. And so it's starting to gain more, you know, awareness. Folks are learning about it more and more. And I actually am trained in that. So it is a treatment that I offer. It's a little different than ERP. It's looking at, OCD from a different lens, from the lens of, these obsessions are not just these random intrusive thoughts that you're having. These are actually inferences, and an inference is just a conclusion that we make through a reasoning process. And ICBT is looking at, obsessions as conclusions, as inferences that people are making based on a reasoning process that's functioning in a way that's, it's not supposed to. And this reasoning process is causing people to disconnect from their senses, distrust their senses, and over rely on possibility and kind of get really caught up on imagined possibilities instead of grounded realities. It's a more of a gentle approach, and it doesn't involve exposures because we're targeting this reasoning process that happens right between the trigger and the obsession. Like that little space between the trigger and the obsession in that OCD cycle that we spoke about earlier, that's the area we're targeting. So if we can resolve and understand that reasoning process and not allow that obsession to form in the first place, then the rest of the cycle won't take place. So that's a little bit of ICBT. So I wanted to kind of throw that out there because it's another option. ERP is, you know, works for a lot of people and is considered the first line treatment, but ICBT is there too.
Nice. So there's different treatment options even within the models that can be offered. And just for our audience to remember, ERP is the exposure and response prevention model. And, you know, that exposure piece I think is so important. I just think about exposure and a lot of times you hear like, you know, just exposing yourself to whatever it is there is helps. So I was thinking about that example I gave earlier of the individual that would always hit the roof of the car, right before you get to a stoplight, and maybe part of that would be like, okay, let's try not to do that. I'm just thinking, right? I don't know if that's exactly as easy as it works, but.
Yeah. So the exposure piece might be, let's on purpose do the thing that normally triggers your desire to want to tap. Let's do those things to purposely trigger it, but with the intention of learning to respond to that distress that you're feeling in a different way, right? So rather than tapping, we're going to try to just let that anxiety or that distress kind of be there, and we're going to stay with it, and we're going to notice it, and we're going to notice that maybe there's some thoughts there too, and we're just not going to hook onto them, and we're going to just watch that experience shift. And usually what clients see is that they see that distress and anxiety rise, and then eventually it does go down and it does taper. But not always. We're not really aiming to reduce anxiety when we're thinking about exposures. I like to say that reducing anxiety is not really the goal. The goal is to recognize that you don't have to do this compulsion to just get through. Like, you're much more capable of getting through this without engaging in this compulsion, without acting on it, than you think you are. And a nice byproduct of that process is that anxiety does tend to go down, right? It does tend to go down, but we're not really aiming for that, because if we aim for anxiety reduction, then that's what people are looking for. And that, again, that creates this push and pull relationship with emotions and with anxiety. And that's not what we want to create. We want to create a relationship of acceptance. Like, anxiety is welcome here. It's allowed to be here, and it's allowed to leave when it wants to leave. It's allowed to hang out for a little bit, and I'm just going to welcome it, right? So that's kind of like what we want to teach clients.
Okay, normalizing it. Michelle, if somebody in the public is listening and they want to know resources about OCD or just general information about OCD, you did a great job today just providing that psychoeducation and helping really us understand more about OCD and the treatment that's available. But what's a good resource that you would say is out there that has information about OCD and can help provide more education?
Yeah. So, you know, there are a lot of like great resources out there, but the one that I typically send my clients to as the go-to hub of anything OCD is the International OCD Foundation website, which is the IOCDF. So they are on top of everything related to like research, treatment. They actually even have a directory where you can look for therapists as well. So you can plug in your zip code and find a therapist that specializes in OCD. So not just a therapist, but you can find treatment centers, you can find higher levels of care like intensive outpatient programs, psychiatrists. So really, that would be the most trusted resource out there. The reality is that there are some therapists out there who maybe don't specialize in treating OCD, but might say they do and might be using other modalities that aren't, that we don't really know whether they work or not. They're not evidence-based, right? Or they may not even offer what's evidence-based. And so clients won't know that. So I would rather clients go to a trusted place like the directory for the IOCDF and for clients to see what therapy clinicians offer. Most clinicians will offer like a short consultation call, and that would be a good time to ask them, like, what kind of therapy do you use to treat it? If they don't even offer ERP, I don't know. To me, that you want to offer at least the first line treatment therapy to call yourself an OCD specialist.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, I appreciate all of the information you've given us, Michelle. Thank you so much for being on our radio show today. To the audience listening in, Michelle Gomez-Salazar, she's an LCSW. She does treat OCD and anxiety. Just remember, if you're seeking treatment locally, Imperial County Behavioral Health is also here to assist you. For our services, call 442-265-1525 or toll free 1-800-817-5292. Our services are confidential and tailored to your needs. Thank you all for tuning in this week, and until next time.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It, heard each Sunday morning at 7 a.m. on KXO AM 1230 and each Sunday evening at 7 p.m. on FM 107.5. This weekly broadcast is produced by the Public Affairs Department of KXO Radio. This program features weekly community mental health issues on your radio. Let's Talk About It is produced for and presented as a public service by Imperial County Behavioral Health Service, Leticia Plancarte-Garcia, Director. Our co-hosts for today's program were Patricia Arevalo-Caro and Alfonso Ruiz. Thank you for listening.